The Guardian.
During April, The Guardian's podcasts are partnering with audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/audible to find out more.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, defeat at DW. Wigan win first ever game with Man United to leave Martinez not on the rocks. The question, is the title race really back on? The answer, no, it's not. Elsewhere, down at the Last Chance Saloon, it's cheers for QPR, but there's another round of bitter for Wolves, while Blackburn tumble in lively clash with Liverpool. Andy Carroll redeeming himself with the late winner. It's the Sure Shot Shanker redemption. Meantime, there's all you need to sound knowledgeable about the huge games Wednesday across Europe. Rafa on Dortmund-Bayern, Sid on the Derby in Madrid, and me on Juve-Lazio, another special night for Ale Del Piero. All of that plus posts, tweets, and our special FA Cup weekend preview featuring Spurs, Chelsea, Everton and Liverpool, and not the words, gets on my tits. All of that in Football Weekly Extra. Wow, sounds like a bumper show, this. And we've got a bumper crew pod standing by. We've got plenty to talk about as well. Sean Ingle.
Hello.
Hi, Sean. John Ashdown.
Hi.
Hi, John. And Paul McInnes.
Watcha.
Indeed so. We're going to start at the DW, Wigan. We all know the build-up to this one. They'd never so much as got a point against Man United. United had scored 21, was it? Unanswered goals against them in their last five meetings, or something like that. And then, bosh, this happens. Why, Sean Ingle? Why?
Well, I think if you've got to credit Wigan, they really went at United. They pressed, they harried. United didn't even have a shot till well inside the second half, a shot on target. And they deserved it. I think Wigan have been improving. I mean, I thought they looked the worst team in the league over up to Christmas. So I think Martinez deserves a lot of credit. I think also you've got to perhaps look realistically. United had won so many games on the bounce. They can't, perhaps without playing as well as they did, you know, in their glory days, but they kept winning, and there was always going to be a point perhaps that they wouldn't play at their best and would be beaten.
Right. There was this stat about they'd never dropped points with Paul Scholes in the team, obviously the Chelsea draw, but he came on and then the turnaround started in that match. He missed this game, they lose. Is it that obvious?
I don't know. I mean, I was chatting to Rob Smythe, our resident United expert, about that, and he thinks, you know, Scholes has been great. He's, you know, they've won 11 and drawn one of the 12 league games he's played. But he's also pointed out that Carrick, he thinks, has been superb since November time and perhaps hasn't had the credit that he's deserved.
No.
I just think, you know, teams don't play at their best all the time, and these things do happen. Not many people were calling it beforehand, admittedly, but...
It seemed to be that Carrick got hassled off the ball quite a lot, which is something that I remember kind of being one of the things you were criticising for. He needs too much time in kind of high-pressure scenario. And also Johnny Evans got done by DeSanto quite a lot. And Evans is another player whose reputation preceded him but has apparently had a good season and very reliable at the back. So maybe this was just an off game for them, or maybe specific kind of targeting on the part of Martinez made a difference.
Hustling, bustling Wigan. And what a turnaround it's been for him. You talk about reputations changing. Everyone at the start of the season said, why didn't he take the Aston Villa job? Well, there they were, they looked dead and buried midway through the season. I bet he's ruining not taking the Villa job. And look at him now.
He's probably still ruining not taking that job.
I don't think he is. Indeed, there was this rumour that he might be leaving at the end of the season. He says, I don't know where. He says, I heard that, I was very surprised. You wonder where that rumour is coming from. At this stage of the season, there's a real fight amongst the bottom five, and you feel stories like this can upset clubs intentionally. It's interesting the way that rumour suddenly surfaced. Or not.
Hmm. Well, I mean, you have to. I mean, I love Roberto Martinez as a manager and as a man.
Hmm.
And you have to respect the way that he's stuck to his guns all the way through the campaign. They've picked up, I think, 9 points from the last four games, which is the same as they managed to collect in the previous 13 before that. So they are in a sort of little ball of form at the moment, which goes perhaps some way to explaining the result. But yeah, we were saying earlier on in the season that the players that Wigan had survived in previous years because they'd turned up a gem somewhere, and you know, this year the players they brought in hadn't quite clicked, and that was why they were going to go down. But people like Maloney and Victor Moses have upped their game, and that's why they've got a fine chance of staying up.
Mm, excellent stuff. Man United still with a fine chance of winning the title.
As Roberto Mancini is recognising.
He's finished.
Well, I think that's fair enough, isn't it? No.
Well, if they win that game, it's 2 points.
If they win which game?
If City win the derby, it's 2 points.
Oh, that game.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's still two games. I mean, if they keep in blah, blah, blah. I see his point, but it seemed more like kind of reverse psychology.
And Man United not just teasing them, you know, giving them a little glimpse of thigh and then slapping them around the face.
But to tease would be a 1-1 draw with a classic United late. To not see United score a late goal and not even exert all that much pressure was a bit interesting. Right. I still think they'll win, but I don't know.
My big thought about Mancini after the game was that I always thought he looked like Charles Aznavour, but he doesn't. He looks like Belloc. Belloc.
Belloc?
Yeah, he really looks like Belloc.
Of Indiana Jones.
Out of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah. He does, though. Anyway, now, this weekend, Man City are going to be at Norwich, Paul McKinnon.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a cracker.
All right, well, having crept back to within 5 points of the lead, is Carrero going to prove fatal to their hopes?
I don't know. All I know is that we're going to totally give them a monstering. We're going to go for them left, right and centre. The way we played on Monday was just amazing. We've got nothing to fear, nothing to lose. The challenge is going to be set. Go out and beat these lot when it matters to them. I think we're really going to give them a going. And, you know, the thing about watching City yesterday is that the attitude appeared to be right. You know, it was persistently on the front foot. And they're going to need to bring that into their away showing, which they haven't really been doing of late, and if they don't, then you know we will certainly take advantage of that.
Surely no coincidence that the attitude was right and they got the big win when Balotelli was out the side
because Tevez was in it, so.
Right, Tevez in, Balotelli out, that's the solution. Right, what was the headline today in the Daily Mail? Is this man everything that's wrong with English football?
Absolutely everything that's wrong with British football, yes.
Right, because he's also in charge of the FA's appeals committee as well, isn't he?
That's right, and he regularly runs the line on Premiership games as well.
All right, good. Meantime, United are at home to Villa. There's another team who are playing with the pressure off, Villa, eh?
Not in the same way as Norwich are playing with the pressure off, though. Norwich are doing it in a kind of fun way.
Oh, right.
Villa in a kind of depressed, nothing to play for, miserable way.
But they're not too far from getting sucked into this now, are they?
6 points.
But Bolton have a game in hand.
Yeah.
Anyway.
6 points, though. How many games? Five?
Six for Bolton.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I just wonder whether it might be. I mean, obviously, the game's up for Wolves. I just wonder whether it might be up for Blackburn.
Well, I backed Blackburn to go down at the start of the season, and I stand to make quite a lot of
money. Well, that's the relevant factor, isn't it?
But, you know, everyone thought 3 weeks ago they were safe.
Yes.
And the people,
I didn't think that.
Well, no, but certainly the market suggested they were. And people have praised Blackburn a lot this season. And it's very like West Ham last season. Bad start, good players, then they pick things up. West Ham, this time, sort of March last year, actually, they beat Liverpool, I think, 3-1. And people thought they were safe, and then they ended up finishing bottom. Blackburn have got a similar thing. And if you look at their running, it's not, you know, it's not easy. Away at Swansea, home at Norwich, then Spurs away, home at Wigan, and the last day of the season away at Chelsea. So they're in desperate trouble. At the
moment. Well, they looked safe, and now they look in trouble. But they're only 3 points off safety, and things are moving with extraordinary frequency there in the bottom five. Currently, QPR and Wigan on 31 points, Bolton with a game in hand on 29, then Blackburn on 28. Wolves, as you say, looking well out of the picture. Should we talk about the extraordinary match at Ewood Park Monday night? Was it Monday night or Tuesday night?
Tuesday night,
Blackburn Liverpool, 5 goals, 2 penalties. Liverpool's third choice keeper saving a penalty with his first action, and then it was pretty much downhill from there, wasn't it, for Brad Jones?
Well, he did manage to save one amazing Andy Carroll backheader, which was quite striking.
Ah.
It was a better header than the one he managed to win the game, which from the edge of the 18-yard box, and it was going top corner, and Jones saved it.
Ooh.
But yeah, he didn't have as bad a game as John Flanagan.
Yes, fair enough. What about the fellow up front, the Andy Carroll?
Well, he won a lot of headers defensively, and he got the winner. Well done to him. I mean,
he put himself about, didn't he?
He did. I think Paul Robinson could have done better, personally. But it was a wonderful game. It was one of the most enjoyable games I've seen this season, I think, because it was end to end. It was dramatic, and it had that thrilling denouement as well.
It certainly did.
I think my feeling about Carroll, I've been desperately trying to back him. Amongst kind of all the Liverpool fans whom I know, because I think he's got a unique set of attributes that might be useful. But one of the things I thought he did well on Tuesday, which have been quite frustrating watching him of late, is on the ground, receiving the ball with a back to goal, His touch was there, and he released the ball quickly and accurately. And quite a lot of the time, there's been, even if he's kept possession, the ball has slightly bounced off him. They've lost 5 yards. They've lost momentum, and they didn't lose momentum through him, Carroll, on Tuesday. And I thought that was quite important.
Yeah, playing against the joint worst defence in the Premier League, he did look impressive. Interesting that they decided to fire Damian Comoli just after one of his big-name signings finally did a goal, in the words of Jacob Steinberg. But we'll talk more about the Comoli business later. Right now, we'll finish off part one with a quick word for QPR picking up speed now. QPR.
They did, yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't a great game, but they after sort of Swansea bossed the opening sort of 20 minutes or so, QPR came into it and deserved to win. And fair play to Mark Hughes. I wasn't completely convinced by him at the start, but now they've still got a tough run. They've still got to play Spurs and Chelsea and Man City, so they're not out of it yet, but at least they're out of the relegation zone.
Yeah, and at least they finished with 11 men as well.
So, yeah, Joey Barton scored.
Yeah,
Swansea look a bit rumbled though, don't they?
Yeah, they look like they're the team to be playing for the rest of the season, aren't they? There's a hint of the Blackpools about them, that they've not been sussed out, but have sort of...
Are they not? I thought
they're safe. Steam. They've got enough points in the bag, which is
tired legs.
Yeah. They played a long ball though yesterday, didn't they?
Ooh,
yeah.
Mm. All right then. Well, there you go. That's the situation there. Interesting games coming up at the weekend. Sunderland hosting Wolves. WBA QPR. That's the derby of the acronyms. Swansea Blackburn, and on Monday Wigan at Arsenal. That could put the Latics right back in trouble, of course, or not. We'll see. It's an interesting game, that one. Now that's it for part one. Part two with all sorts of continental stuff after this. Part two, and time to get the continental perspective on a big midweek in Europe. Starting off in the Bundesliga, Rafa Honigstein. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Rafa. Hey.
Hi.
Yeah. How about that title decider then, eh? Borussia Dortmund by Munich. Amazing game, you said. Just one goal, but an amazing game.
Last 5 minutes, or last 12 maybe, starting with the goal from Lewandowski, who was absolutely sensational for Dortmund. Scored a goal with a cheeky back flick of the heel. At a time when Bayern were coming into the game, Dortmund were really dominating the first half. Bayern came into it, then Dortmund scored, and then all hell broke loose, with Arjen Robben winning a penalty, missing a penalty, and then missing a sitter in injury time from about 1.5 metres out. So he was really the sort of the tragic hero, because he'd also played Lewandowski onside for the goal. So everything that could have gone wrong went wrong for him. And as you said, Dortmund, 6 points clear now, all but champions elect.
Wow. Formica Atomica saying, hilarious watching Subotic giving Robin the full Martin Keown after he missed his penalty. Did he go and stoop over him and give him a full blast?
He came right in his face. You might say it was the money shot for this game. Definitely a strong reaction. He didn't also jump into him with elbows and stuff. So
right.
Not quite Keown-esque, okay. But... He later said he was just telling Robin that he didn't like diving.
But it was a penalty, wasn't it?
It was a penalty, yeah. Subotic felt that it wasn't, and also Weidenfeller, the Dortmund keeper, insisted that there was absolutely no contact. But for once, there actually wasn't a dive, and it was a penalty, but it didn't really matter in the end.
Rafa, I know some people have complimented you in the past for your use of English. I just have to warn you, because I think inadvertently you've strayed into the realm of double entendre there previously. Be careful about that kind of thing.
I'm sure that was completely accidental.
All right. Sean?
I was going to ask, Bayern, to me, only really got going when they were 1-0 down. Do you think they set off a little bit too much, given it was a title decider?
I disagree with you. I think they really controlled the second half. Dortmund just had a little bit less intensity, perhaps being a bit tired from the incredible pressing in the first half. And Bayern didn't create many chances, you're right, before the first goal, but they seem to have sort of calmed things down, and I think everybody was more or less happy with a 0-0, and there were shades or an echo of the first encounter when, again, it was 0-0 for a long time, and both sides seemed to be pretty happy before the ball fell to Götze and he scored. I think Dortmund did enough in that first half, and they really created fantastic chances and really played brilliantly and played Bayern off the pitch, to be fair, to warrant a win. And you saw the reactions afterwards from Bayern, more or less A, conceding the title, but also conceding that it was a fair result despite the slightly unfortunate manner in which they managed to miss the draw. And I think that was a reflection, but A, on Dortmund's superiority throughout the 90 minutes, but also, I think, grudgingly, a show of respect that Dortmund perhaps have just been the better team throughout the season again.
Well, Bayern now focus on their Champions League semi-final with Real Madrid, one imagines.
Absolutely, they'll have to. The only sort of good news or blessing in disguise could be that by the time they kick off on Saturday at home to Mainz, Dortmund might have got their last really tricky fixture out of the way. They play away to Schalke. Schalke will do everything to ruin the party for their rivals. But if Dortmund win that game, or even draw, I think that Jupp Heynckes might be tempted to rest one or two players, because I think it'll be impossible for Bayern to still win the title if Dortmund get a result. So that might be the only thing working for them. But I think in terms of momentum, in terms of confidence, it certainly wouldn't have helped them. Also, there will be a debate again about Robin, perhaps, being a difficult character, being egotistical, etc. And Schweinsteiger didn't play from the beginning, and seemed very upset, and after the game went straight into the bus without a shower or a change.
Wow.
So we'll hear more about that.
A lot of people have touted him as the big reason for Bayern's resurgence in the Bundesliga of late. How come he was left out?
He wasn't the reason for their resurgence, because they started turning things around when he was still very much absent.
Right.
And that's the reason partly why he was also left out. They felt that they didn't quite need him, and he was still a little bit short on match practice. And Jupp Heynckes' thinking was that in this kind of game, with the amount of excessive running that Dortmund are infamous for, you needed someone just a little bit fitter. And to bring him on after 60 minutes looked for a long time as if it was some kind of master plan or a great ploy, because they did control the game after he came on and, nearly got the draw that they wanted, or perhaps a win. But in the end, it looks as if it was the wrong decision, of course.
All right, well done, Borussia Dortmund. Nice one, Rafa. Are you in the pod again soon, perhaps to talk about Real Madrid next week?
Absolutely.
All right, next Thursday, says producer Ben. Look forward to that one. Rafa, thanks very much for today. Speak to you soon. Tell you what, after that, how about a bit of Serie A, eh? Because they had a big midweek round. He said. Silence.
Go on, John. Say something nice about Serie A.
Come on.
I love Serie A football.
No, come on.
No, I do.
We'll chop this bit, won't we, Ben? Yeah, they had a big midweek round.
They did, and it was quite interesting that Juve, I thought, was wobbling a little bit.
No.
Lazio, they won again.
Oh, in the game?
In the game, yeah.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, it looked like it was heading to a draw. Instead, they got the fifth straight win. That's 32 games unbeaten. Now, Milan on Tuesday had gone back on top with a win away at Chievo, a game which featured, you probably saw this interesting vignette of Montari having scored the goal, leaving the field and handing his shirt to one of the ball boys who holds it and rather confused and gives it back to him. And Montari says, you keep it. And the ball boy says, no, really, you have it back. And this became quite a famous incident in Italy. And I think some people were suggesting there might be overtones to it. But he just seems to be a very polite ball boy saying, no, sir, this is your shirt. You must need this. And apparently he then did accept it because he is a Milan fan, curiously. Nicolò, he's a 10-year-old. And yeah. Anyway, it's club policy. They can't accept shirts off strange players.
It's quite young, 10-year-old to be a ball boy.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? There you go. I've never been a ball boy myself, but...
I have.
Have you?
Yeah, that Littles Cup final, Arsenal-Luton in 1988 at Wembley.
Wow,
I played keep-em-ups with Danny Wilson and Ashley Grimes in the tunnel beforehand, walked out, heard the Wembley roar.
Yeah. Back when it really was a Wembley roar.
Absolutely.
As well.
And I touched the ball once during the game.
Wow.
And afterwards...
Were you nervous when the ball came to you? Did you have to give it back to a player or what?
Yeah, not really. It's just picked up and lobbed it.
Because I would have been... Do you know when you walk past gangs of school children playing football and they kick a ball towards you and you think, oh, shoot, I've got to kick it back to them now. I bet I'm going to sky this. Did you have that?
No, I just picked it up and lobbed it back. But it was a great day. It was one of the best days of my life.
Right, until you started doing the podcast.
I met you.
Right, okay then, okay. Anyway, did we mention the Chievo business? I think we did. So anyway, then Juve were back behind Milan and they opened the scoring against Lazio. They were all over Lazio. And then Pepe, what a overhead kick. Oh, it was kind of a bizarre kind of volley thing, wasn't it? But it was brilliant, wasn't it?
That was probably two woofs on your woofometer, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I'd say so. And then Maori comes back and they make it 1-1 just before half time. And it's got to about, what, 82nd minute? And you think, Juve, this is where Milan are going to stretch out the lead again. But instead, who should step up? But on his 700th appearance, Paul McInnes.
Could it be Alessandro Del Piero?
Yeah. Great free Olé. Kick. Rubbish wall, but great free kick. Great free kick. And that now takes him up to 318 goals in his career. That's only one less than Baggio. How about that?
So how many superb geriatricos are there in the top leagues of European football?
Oh, I see.
Surely more than ever before, huh?
Yeah.
I think well, in Italy, because Totti, who's 35... Well, Alessandro Del Piero is 37. Totti's 35.
Zanetti.
Well, thanks for mentioning it. Totti scored as well in a big game for Roma against Udinese, because, of course, Lazio losing at Juve, that meant that the race for third, last Champions League place, now has Lazio 3 clear of Udinese, who got beaten by Roma with a Totti goal, 3-1 win. So Roma are now 1 point behind Udinese, 4 off the top three. Napoli and Inter are 6 points off the top three. Napoli lost at home to Atalanta. They're in a rotten run of form ever since losing to Chelsea. Inter, Zanetti, he became their all-time most appearances player. Right. Yeah. And he's now equaled Dino Zoff's record. And Zoff, right, of course, was a goalkeeper. Maldini's the all-time leader with 647 appearances in Serie A. Zanetti and Zoff are on 570. Paluca, you remember Paluca? Yeah, 592. Inter 1, they beat Siena 2-1. And blah, blah, blah. And just to mention that down at the bottom, Lecce won, which means that Fiorentina and Genoa are in real trouble. Fiorentina are only 3 points from the drop. Genoa only 2 points from the drop. Quickly checks table. It was the 32. So, and with six games to go, yikes.
I was going to ask you, you must have met Del Piero in his prime a few times. I mean, what's he like as a guy?
Well, I think Del Piero is a very intelligent person, quite shy, quite reserved, decent chap. Doesn't particularly like the kind of glamorous life. He basically, for what it's worth, he married a shop assistant rather than a wag. I think he's, you know, he always seemed very down to earth, which is interesting because he's from a very early age, he was made so much the focus at Juve. I mean, they even named their mascot Alex and produced comic books called Alex with this kind of cartoon figure. And it was clearly all about him. When they decided to ditch Roberto Baggio for him, huge amount of pressure on him.
And even like kind of World Cup in 1998, when he would have been obviously very young, he was seen as, you know, Italy's golden boy even back then.
Well, yeah, and that was a bit of an issue because Baggio was coming back into it for that, and he got fit just for the World Cup, and Cesare Maldini wouldn't use him. Baggio and Vieri looked outstanding in training together, and he kept going with Del Piero, and Del Piero, yeah. Sorry, John.
I'd say, is he a future... Well, two questions, really. Is he a future Juve manager, do you think?
Well, producer Ben wants me to move on, but I'm just going to say that's one of the big debates, especially today. Rather controversially, Juve's president, Andrea Agnelli, came out a while back and said this will be Del Piero's last season at the club. And a lot of people said, come on, that's not a very decent way and dignified way to announce this, given the years of service he's given to the club. The way he's playing at the moment and the crucial manner in which he's contributing to Juve's title run, today it's all about, oh, you've got to give him another year, got to give him another year. Now, some of the more sager correspondents and commenters are saying, look, go out on a high, you're going to be 38 next season, finish it here. But hard, isn't it, when he's playing like this? Anyway, producer Ben, I'll move on now. Oh, Gattuso came back. Yeah, played his first game in 7 months. Now, that's enough of all.
His interview was great. Well, sorry, producer Ben, but his interview was great. Gattuso talking about little drugs he has to take just to get himself.
I didn't see that.
But yeah.
Yeah. All right, then. Now, Spain.
Hello, guys.
Hey, there he is, Sid Lowe. Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello.
We've got 5 minutes, Sid. Sid, I love you, but we've only got 5 minutes before we have to clear the studio. To save
the
earth.
Go, rush, go.
All right, what are you up to, Sid? Nice morning, is it, in Madrid?
I'm writing about Ronaldo.
Why, what's he done?
Right, he was a bit, well, to use your word, James, I think it's the only word that's worth it today, is woof.
Right.
He was absolutely astonishing last night.
All right.
He scored two just ridiculously good goals, goals that kind of almost brutal in the way that you hit the ball. I wouldn't quite go so far as to say single-handedly, but very close to single-handedly defeated Atletico Madrid. Now, of course, we all know that Atletico Madrid lose to Real Madrid. That's what happens. But last night they were beaten 4-1. I don't think Real Madrid were 4-1 better than Atletico Madrid, but Cristiano Ronaldo certainly was 4-1 better than Atletico Madrid. Brilliant. He's now on 40 goals this season, 138 in his 136 Real Madrid games. It's just stupid, isn't it?
That's incredible, isn't it? He is a tragic figure. His curse to walk the earth in the same days as a certainly Lionel Messi.
Well, you know what I've done? I've written about him today, and I've decided I'm not going to mention Messi, because I think sometimes that we seem to have this bizarre attitude where we're only allowed to like one player. Why can't there be more than one good player on the planet? I think he's brilliant. I honestly do think that Messi's better than him. I think that's true. I think Messi has more to his game, controls the game more, expresses more sense of dominance of the ball. But Ronaldo's decisiveness from Real Madrid and the impact that he's having, and I think he's going to take them, not single-handedly again. You know, Real Madrid are far too good, far too expensive a team, far too many great players to ever talk about single-handed. But what Ronaldo's doing to lead them towards the title is just incredible.
All right. Well, the backdrop to all this was that Barcelona won on Tuesday, so it brought back the gap at the top to just 1 point, with the Clásico coming up again quite soon. So when it was 1-1, with not long to go in the game, absolutely huge what Ronaldo did. When you look at his figures, Sid, statistically, he seems to be that much better than he was when he was at Man United. Do you think he's improved massively as a player, or what's the story?
No, I think he's surrounded by a better team. I think that it is worth asking the question about the opposition. And I think when the attacks are made on the Spanish league, and said, "Oh, Messi and Ronaldo would never do well in England." Well, of course, it's patently nonsense. They do extremely well in England, but would they score quite as many goals? Who knows? And I do think that you know, the Spanish league, despite the huge success in Europe and the fact that we're now looking at 5 of the 8 semi-finalists of Spanish, we might have 4 out of 4 finalists of Spanish. And that makes everyone say, quite rightly, the Spanish league is not too bad, but it doesn't disguise the fact that there are huge structural problems in the Spanish league, huge financial difficulties in terms of the difference between the top 2 and the rest. And of course that has an impact on the kind of figures that Ronaldo and Messi are getting. But that shouldn't be taken as a way of denying them credit for what they're doing, because it is incredible. And I think he probably is a slightly better player than Man United, but I think it's the surroundings are different, and you know, the quality of the opposition, the quality of his teammates, the quality of what he's got around him helps him, definitely.
All right. You mentioned 4 finalists potentially in the 2 European competitions. Of course, Real still have to get past Bayern Munich on either side of the Clásico. Is their squad so big that that's not really going to impact on the title race, do you think?
Well, the squad is big, and so it might not impact on the title race. I mean, of course, in theory, it will have a little bit of an impact. But of course, bear in mind that the title race is a straightforward head-to-head now between Real Madrid and Barcelona, and it's the Clásico that's the key game. So we say, well, will it impact on Real Madrid playing Bayern Munich? Well, yeah, probably a bit. But at the same time, it's going to impact on Barcelona playing against Chelsea, and Barcelona have a slight disadvantage, which is that Real Madrid get Tuesday, Wednesday. Barcelona get Wednesday, Tuesday in the Champions League, either side of the Clásico. In other words, Real Madrid get an extra game going into the Clásico and an extra game coming out of the Clásico.
Extra day.
So when you talk about the impact it will have, will it have an impact? Probably. Will it have as much of an impact as it does on Barcelona? Maybe not. And I suppose the question mark will be, how tough will those 2 semi-finals be?
All right. Sid, listen, one last thing before we let you go. 15th goal, I noticed, by Runa Kone for Levante. I think it was Filippo Maria Ricci tweeting that to 3 more, and he'll have to go back to Sevilla by contract. He wants to stay, so he has to stop scoring. Is that right?
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, contractually forced to go back on 18 goals. He was asked about this the other day, and he said, well, look, the most important thing is the team, so I will try and score. But who knows, if it might come to a point where I'll have to start missing.
But he wants to stay at Levante rather than go back to Sevilla.
He does, but I think this is a little bit of a myth, in that he wants to stay at Levante, but Levante's financial situation is such that if he continues at Levante, they would like to keep him on loan or exercise. I think there's a purchase clause. I must confess, off the top of my head, I don't know what fee it is. I think Levante would love to do what they did with Felipe Caicedo, which, of course, is to exercise the purchase option and then sell him, because, of course, Levante are a club with no money.
Mm. Fair enough, Sid. All right, lovely stuff. Look forward to speaking to you on Monday, then, ahead of the big Champions League semi.
Yep, brilliant. Speak to you then.
Cheers, Sid. Posts. Hi, Dian Wong. Dian Wong, yeah, posting in. Nice to hear from you. Lots of people posting on the FA. Is it the FA? Whoever was appealing the or judging the appeals for the red cards, etc., the decisions last week, and didn't change Sean Derry's thing on the Ashley Young dive, and didn't ban Balotelli further, and what a joke the whole thing is, and Nikita Khrushchev and Just Can't Take No More, the evocatively named Just Can't Take No More, both speaking out. I think words we'll all share, but I won't share with you now because we'll agree. Chris Armstrong says, don't forget about Cavie in position to make the French Cup final. Indeed they are. They beat Rennes. They're going to be facing Lyon. They're from what level of the French?
They're third division, I think. Not third quite division? As good as Calais. But
they're part-timers. Yeah. All right, then. And Sam Hilliard says, I'd like to add Ronaldinho's goal to your list on Tuesday's Football Weekly. Not any of the three stars mentioned. What we had was top volley ever, top team move ever, top run ever. And why are you frowning like
is
that,
Sean? The goal against Seaman, is it?
No.
Oh, okay.
Ronaldinho's goal, the one against Chelsea. Yeah, the one where he does the little shimmy and they just bangs it in. And he says it belongs to a fourth category, technique. No, that's fair. I'm not sure if it's the greatest technique goal ever. And why there's no Quagliarella in there, I'd like to know. But anyway.
Anybody who saw my goal for the Guardian five-a-side team, do you remember that tournament we played at the Highbury? You played in goal, Sean, and I scored a back heel from, must have been 20 yards.
I have no recollection of this at all.
I did.
In
really
which
did.
Goal?
Oh, I do remember.
In the other team's goal?
Place, yeah.
All right, okay. Sean the Octopus.
No, I do remember that. We got to the final, didn't we? And we got beaten in the final.
Yeah, I think we did, yeah.
All right. Okay. John, you're going to West Ham this weekend.
I am, yeah, to watch them take on Brighton.
Big game, that one.
It is. It's sort of dependent a little bit on what happens between Southampton and Reading.
That's on Friday, isn't it? Wow, what a big game. Top two in the Championship.
Yeah, they're both 6 points clear of West Ham in third, and a draw will probably suit them both.
Yeah.
And actually, to be fair, a draw wouldn't suit West Ham, would it? Because they want to catch somebody.
They want to catch somebody, don't they? And Brighton want to catch somebody to get into the playoff positions, don't they?
Yeah, and I saw them down at I was down at Brighton on Tuesday when they played Reading.
Yeah,
Brighton were really good, and were slightly unlucky to lose. Really, Poirier said afterwards it was a really good point actually that the fact that Reading hadn't played well but had won. He said it happened exactly the same to Brighton last year when they played 8 games in March, weren't better than any team that they came up against, even Dagenham and Redbridge, as he said. Yet they won. They won each one. And they went up.
All right. Good. Now, FA Cup semi-finals this weekend. Wembley awaits for Chelsea and Spurs and, of course, Liverpool and Everton. It's the Londoners first for us rivals, of course, in the race for fourth place. Only 2 points apart in that particular competition. Spurs on a rotten run of form in the league. They've only won 3 of their last 11 in the Premier League. They've done better in the Cup. But is it fair to say that they've not really faced anyone in the Cup yet, have they?
Stevenage,
Cheltenham, Watford, Bolton.
Yeah, well, perhaps, although, you know, who have Chelsea faced?
I didn't check that, actually. Right. Leicester and Birmingham, says an extremely well-informed producer, Ben. Crikey. Chelsea, of course, have got 6 games coming up in 18 days. Not sure what impact that'll have on this. But
it's going to have some impact. If you're playing Barcelona on Wednesday night, and then you've got to play Arsenal, and then you've got to play Barcelona again. I mean, that's a tough ask.
But this is before those games rather than after those games.
Sure, but yeah, I wonder whether there might come a point where they are thinking we can't play the same team twice.
Is it now not the run-in, though? Is it not kind of the part where adrenaline can maybe get you through and you...
It is, although when John Terry was carrying his rib injury, you've got to think, how many of those 4 games can he play? So there will have to be changes, you would think.
Mm, that's true. What do you feel about this, Chelsea and Spurs?
It's a really tough one to call. I'd love to see, just to make a change, I'd love to see Spurs-Everton as a final, just for something a little bit different.
I think it's very open, though, isn't it? I mean, you could imagine any one of the four winning the trophy, which is not something you can
accept. For Liverpool, because the refs will do for them, yeah? With the conspiracy.
Yeah, the conspiracy.
Sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned that, because we're all sworn to silence in that. But, I mean, to be fair.
Who swore us to silence? Their paymasters?
Yeah. The shadowy paymasters. Right. Anyway, Chelsea Spurs does look quite open, and then Everton will win the other. And I think, as you recall, Dalglish is going to walk out from a Wembley toilet straight after.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is that what the paymasters told us?
No, that's just my own particular feeling about this one.
Right.
Yeah, anyway, it's an interesting clash.
Keegan-style fashion.
Yeah.
Right, sorry, mate.
It's Well, there are all sorts of factors in Everton's favour. The fact that they lost 3-0 last time that they played Liverpool, which has got to be a big incentive for Moyes' boys to do.
The fact they're playing incredibly well at the minute.
Yeah, they've got a good run of form behind them. And, Liverpool are going to have their third-choice keeper between the posts. We mentioned Brad Jones before. They've called back, is it Gulaksi from Hull? But it'll still be Brad Jones between the posts.
Yeah, well, Gulaksi wasn't even playing for Hull, even though he was on loan at Hull. He was their backup on the bench.
Right, so he's basically just there to provide some cover.
Well, he wasn't, no, because he was playing before sort of New Year, and then it...
Be interesting to see where they go with regards to Cahill and Fellaini then. Everton, you know, how much of an attacking position they're put in.
Yeah.
Because I think they could monster somebody like Brad Jones with a bit of...
Yeah, you want to put him under pressure early doors, won't you?
You do, yeah.
Yeah. All right, then. Here's a fact from Jonathan Wilson. Despite being injured since November, Lucas Leiva has still made more tackles than anybody else in the Liverpool squad this season. Ouch.
I thought John Joe Shelvey had quite a good game.
What, against Blackburn?
Against Blackburn.
All right,
I think that's apropos of nothing, actually.
Right. Quick word on Camoli, then, because, interestingly, Liverpool have chosen a couple of days before the semi-final to give the old heave-ho there at Anfield to their director of football, Damien Camoli. Does this strengthen Kenny's position? What does this mean?
It'll be interesting to see if Camoli is replaced. Because I think if he's not, then I think it does strengthen Dalglish's position. Camoli's an interesting one because I think he's been slightly harshly done by, because Dalglish controls Liverpool. Everything, you know, he's on top of everything there. And Dalglish has himself admitted that he had full input into all these signings. And actually, if you look at Camoli's signings at Spurs, he brought, you know, there were kind of some good ones and some bad ones, but he brought in Kabul, Gareth Bale, Okoto, Modric, Berbatov. And, you know, he also brought in, admittedly, Ricardo Rocha, you know, for $3 million. He only played 14 times. Darren Bent, Mido, David Bentley. And also a couple, interesting, it didn't quite work, but were good players. You know, Boateng and Turat. So he's got a mixed record. I think a less so with Liverpool. But with Liverpool, you wonder whether Dalglish wanted to sign more English players. There weren't real kind of curveballs like there were with Spurs. So I think he's been a little bit harshly treated.
I think I probably agree with you. And a wag was saying on Twitter this morning, you know, does Charlie Adam really strike you as a Camoli-style signing? But I think what's quite interesting about his Liverpool reign is that how inflated the prices were. Regardless of who these people were, that either it's bad negotiation on the part of Liverpool or the market had changed to such an extent, or Liverpool were in a position because they knew there was new money invested or whatnot, that there was no Bellamy aside, maybe, there was no Kyle Walker-style cheap Gareth Bale, cheap bargain signings.
But that's the whole idea with Moneyball, that you are looking at stats and you're saying, okay, I can get this guy the cheap, even though stats are better than they are, or you sell players that, you know, stats don't justify their worth. But Liverpool, as Paul says, seems to just be buying at the top of the market, and obviously the urban myth around Carroll is they were going to pay 25 million, Mike Ashley at the last moment decided actually, what, 35 million, and Liverpool went along with it. You know, that doesn't strike me as a really coherent transfer policy.
But if Camoli is gone, and if he's been pushed, as seems to be the case, does that not mean that they've decided to pin the blame on him and that Kenny's position is stronger? I mean, it doesn't matter because he's going to walk out anyway on this weekend, but...
What would be interesting is whether there's a replacement, first, and secondly, how involved Fenway Sports Group get, because they've been a little bit hands off, you know, like, particularly over the whole Suarez thing. Now, it may be, if you look at how things changed with Villa, with Randy Lerner, the first year or two he was quite hands off, let O'Neill get on with things, then realised that wages were spiraling out of control, wasn't quite going as he wanted, he got more hands on, and you wonder whether Fenway might do the same.
Alright, meantime, Everton, as you mentioned, Paul, they're coming in on a fine run of form. Here's Matt Geraghty saying, I know you rarely talk about Everton, but can any of the pod explain why they go supersonic at this time of year? It is a curious thing, isn't it? Every season's a bit like a box of Quality Street. You know, the longer it's out there, the more it comes up toffees, you know, because all the good ones are...
I would say no.
Oh,
no.
Why?
No. Well, the thing is with the box of Quality Street is all the rubbish gets left till the end.
That's the toffees.
The toffees aren't the rubbish.
They are.
Strawberry creams and the coffee creams are the rubbish.
Anything but toffee. Really? You're with Ingle there with his vanilla nonsense.
You're in a big minority saying that toffees are the
really?
Bad part of Quality
All right, I'm going to put that one out to the listeners. Hands up, who likes toffees?
I'm right. saying though that most people take the hazelnut and toffee thing first.
I'll take any. I'll do it for me.
Toffee finger.
Right. Okay.
Toffee yeah. ingot for me.
I'm surprised. Toffee's the Brussels sprout of confectionery.
With bacon, very tasty.
Anyway, but back to Matt Gehrig's original question, which I'm not sure if we've completely answered yet. Anyway, well, I actually looked up what other people think, which is, you know, how I roll, about this whole Everton question. And there were three things really came up. One, this whole notion of David Moyes getting his team to go out there and prove people wrong. So they do rubbish to start off with, and then people write them off, and then they go out and prove people wrong. Secondly, he's got a very good record of bringing people in January, which has really helped things out. I mean, Joe, Landon Donovan. And, of course, this season, Jelovic has proved to be an outstanding acquisition at that time of year. And thirdly, the fact they don't play many games. In fact, last season they only played 44 games, excluding friendlies, whilst a lot of the other teams that might be in a similar position will have cup runs and that kind of thing. I mean, obviously Everton are in a cup this year, so that kind of falls apart. But, no, Sean.
Could it not be simply regression to the mean?
What's that mean?
Well, the fact that, you know, Everton have probably the seventh best squad, in the Premier League.
Right.
They start off badly.
Do they have the seventh best squad in the Premier League?
I'd say so. And each year they then improve, as you'd expect them to do, and they just regress basically to, you know, where they should finish up, which is seventh.
But could it not be equally be the other way around, though, in that case, that they start really well and then fade and
revert
back to seventh?
And do you think they really have the seventh best squad in the Premier League?
I mean, it depends on any given day, I suppose, but I think they've probably got a better squad than... Right now, I look at them and think all these players, even Strakralasi and stuff, they're all coming through and developing their games. And Achebe looks great at the minute. You look at the squad, you think depth. One thing I wonder about Everton is when they struggle in the summer because they're looking to make marquee signings. They're looking to kind of actually improve their squad rather than fill kind of holes that are necessary. And they don't have the money to be able to go out and seal the deal early on. They end up kind of trying to do deals at the end of the window. And then the squad isn't bedded in properly. I think by the time you get to the second half of the season, a lot of their signings from the summer had integrated a bit more into the team.
Well, that's a very good explanation. Yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah. I'd suggest that their first 11 is the seventh best in the league. I don't think they've got the squad depths of some other teams, but I think that allied to the fact they don't play that many games allows them to play that first 11 more often, and also that a bit of January spicing up. Basically, I agree with everybody.
Yeah, sure.
But haven't they finished seventh the last 2 years and are currently in seventh at the moment?
I don't know.
Yeah, they've been either sixth or
they are seventh at the moment.
Previous to that.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know what? We're going to go out on a high. That brings to an end today's Football Weekly Extra. As ever, the Guardian website and iTunes will both offer you a Friday morning roundup of what the European papers said about the week's football. Plenty to enjoy there, one hopes. We'll be back on Monday with our roundup of the weekend's games. In the meantime, many thanks to Paul McKinney's. You can read his guide every Saturday with The Guardian. And John Ashdown, who will be going to West Ham Brighton. And Sean, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm in the office.
All right, then. Yeah. Lovely. OK, have a super one yourselves. Speak to you Monday.
During April, The Guardian's podcasts are partnering with audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/audible to find out more.